Hey, you're listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full, along with all the interviews, tips and chat, just catch the full show, plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m, with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m, with new episodes every other week. But for now, enjoy the Happy Hour podcast. Hi, my name's Holly Chuk.
And I'm Polina Kohorev.
And welcome to our brand new show, The Happy Hour.
We know things are a little bit difficult at the moment.
So we've got lots of hints and tips to help you keep happy during these challenging and uncertain times.
But to start things off, let's have a track that both Holly and I love. Here's Justin Timberlake and Can't Stop the Feeling.
This feeling inside my bones, it goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off from my city, off from my home, we're flying up no ceiling when we in our zone. I got
you're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and this is our brand new show, The Happy Hour. I'm Holly Chuk, and this is actually my first time on the radio, so I'm super excited to be here. Just to tell you a little bit about me, I'm registered blind due to a condition called retinopathy of prematurity. I'm the author of the award-winning blog Life of a Blind Girl, and as well as raising awareness of vision impairment and disability, I also enjoy your usual girly stuff like beauty, fashion, makeup, music, going to concerts, and I also love sitting down to read a good book.
And my name is Polina Kohorev, and I'll be joining Holly on the Happy Hour. Now, Holly and I met a wee while ago during an interview, and we've actually bonded over all those things you've mentioned, the music, the fashion, the beauty, Harry Styles and Ed Sheeran, who might or might not be coming up on the show today, but I don't want to spoil anything. But it's been a really weird time, and we've been talking about 2020, and I don't know about you, Holly, but I found it very difficult.
Yeah, me too. It's been a really challenging and uncertain year. We've never lived through a pandemic before, so it's been something completely new and difficult and different for everyone. So we might have had plans that have been cancelled, because it's always nice to have things to look forward to, but obviously everything has been changed and the whole year has just kind of gone upside down in a way. But also, I think it's okay to admit that it's been a challenging year, and we should be proud of ourselves for getting through it.
Exactly, which is why we thought it would be amazing to share some tips and advice with you when it comes to looking after our mind, body, and our soul. And coming up, we'll be speaking with Amanda Hawkins, who will share some advice when it comes to mindfulness.
I only recently got into mindfulness. I'm very much a newbie. I downloaded one of the popular mindfulness and meditation apps, but that's as far as I got, and I've been using it. But there's definitely a lot more that I can learn, so I'm excited to find out more from Amanda.
So that's coming up shortly, but as promised, we're going to listen to Ed Sheeran now and his Galway Girl.
Next up, we're going to be chatting to RNIB's Amanda Hawkins about all things mental health and well-being. Here she is with our very own Paulina.
We're finding ourselves in odd times right now, so if you're perhaps feeling overwhelmed, stressed, or worried, you're not alone. But what can we do to better deal with such emotions? Well, one of the tips given by NHS to improve our mental health and well-being is to practice mindfulness. But what is mindfulness and can it really help? Well, I'm joined now by RNIB's specialist lead in emotional support, Amanda Hawkins, who can help answer some of our questions. It's nice to speak with you, Amanda.
Hi, nice to speak to you too.
So, Amanda, what exactly is mindfulness? Because I've seen this word thrown around a lot recently and it seems to be quite popular.
Yeah, I mean, actually, mindfulness is really old. It's something we've been doing forever. It's a basic human ability to be fully present, aware of where we are and what we're doing, and not to overly react to things or be overwhelmed by what's going on around us. So I think it can be really useful, especially when we're feeling overwhelmed and there are big things going on in the world. But it's something that we all possess.
Because right now, as I said, things are quite different, and this is something that could perhaps help us deal with stress and anxiety of everyday life.
Yeah, and it's just some time out. I think in many ways, mindfulness is a healthy habit. So just taking time out in the day to sit and think about what is important, what's matter, what can we let go of, what it gives us joy, what's irritating us at the moment, and do we need to do something about it? A structured way to just take time out and think about what we want to do with our day and reflect on what's happening. I think sometimes life is so busy that we don't reflect what's important to me, what's not important to me. Can I let that go? What gives me joy? Do I need to do more of that? So it's that really sort of gentle, structured time. And there's lots of things that can help us do that. I mean, we can just take that time out and sit there for 10 minutes, close our eyes and think about those things. Or there are some really good apps on phones these days, like Headspace, that can talk us through. So you can do it alone. Some people find that quite hard, because actually to sit there in silence, you know, for 10 minutes can sometimes feel overwhelming. So if mindfulness is quite new to you, then actually some of the apps available can be quite helpful, because it helps you get started.
And the good thing about some of these apps, specifically Headspace, is that it's quite accessible to people who live with a visual impairment.
Absolutely, yeah, it really is, and anyone, you know, can access them, and it's they're all audible, so there's no visuals involved, everything's audible, and that's the whole point, is we want to come out of the world and just sit there in a quiet space and just think about some of these things, you know, just putting these pauses in our life. And we can do it once a day, twice a day, three times a day, and it's like a good healthy habit. You can even do it while you're walking.
So you actually gave us a few quite helpful tips already, but could you give us some top tips from you when it comes to learning to practice mindfulness?
Okay, so mindfulness meditation gives us time in our lives where we can suspend judgment and unleash our natural curiosity about the workings of the mind, approaching our experience with warmth and kindness to ourselves. So I think if we have that in mind, just sitting there and thinking, you know, what's going on for me? What am I feeling? I'm not going to judge myself for feeling anxious about what's happening. I'm just going to allow it to come up, and then think about right behind that. Well, how, if I am feeling anxious, what can I do about it? And, you know, quite often the answer's there. So I think just starting, not being too worried if it feels really unusual to sit there and give your brain some time. It's not something that we generally do. And I think just the other side of mindfulness is we're not being mindful. We're not giving ourselves that time to think about things that are giving us joy or giving us anxiety. Then these things will come up in our brain, and it will happen at night. Or we'll be distracted when we're trying to focus on something else. So it's not like the brain doesn't do this. It's just allowing that little space for the brain to actually, you know, to process some of the stuff that's going on. You don't need to do anything differently. Find what works for you. Use an app. Don't use an app. You know, I think it's useful to time. So if there's a timer on your phone, it's useful to say, right, I'm going to give myself 3 minutes or 5 minutes. Or I'm going to, you know, I want to go for a bit longer. You can build up. But also just to kind of say it's uncomfortable at the beginning. If you're new to it, it does feel strange.
And I've actually seen a very interesting metaphor when it comes to mindfulness, because it's something that's, as you said, it's not easy to learn in the beginning. And they compared looking at your thoughts and anxieties and worries and treating them almost like a bus. So you're sitting at a bus stop and you're just letting the buses come and go, but you're not actually getting on them and you're not letting them carry you away.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's about, you know, just watching and going back to that thing of not judging what you're feeling. It's just allowing it to be there. And I think when we allow things to be there, it comes into our consciousness and we do something about it.
So those are some amazing tips. But if we're looking for some extra support, where could we go?
So I think if, you know, mindfulness is bringing stuff up that's disturbing you and that you do need to talk a little bit more about it, of course, you know, seek out some extra support, especially if we're talking about the pandemic days and the COVID related anxiety that's coming up for people. We do have the emergency mental health sessions as part of the R&IB offer, you know, or, you know, there's always the Samaritans, talk to a friend, reach out. There are people there to talk to. Sometimes when these things come up, and especially if we're isolated, they can still become overwhelming. So don't feel like just because you've started mindfulness, the stuff is coming up, you're on your own with it. You're definitely not. But most people find with the mindfulness, if we're doing that on a regular basis, it's a bit like doing our laundry, isn't it? If we do our laundry on a regular basis, it doesn't build up. If we don't do it for 6 months, suddenly all the clothes are there and it feels really overwhelming. So starting mindfulness might be a bit about working through that laundry pile until we've got it under control.
So if you needed to contact any of the groups that Amanda mentioned there, you can always call the R&IB helpline to find out about the emergency mental health sessions. And the phone number for that is 0303-123-9999. Or you can also call the Samaritans, and the number for them is 116-123. Now, Amanda, it was lovely speaking with you, but we're going to let you go for now. So, Amanda Hawkins, R&IB Specialist Lead in Emotional Support, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You're listening to R&IB Connect Radio, and that was Rembrandt's "And I'll Be There For You." Now, I love this song. It's so energetic. Always makes me get up and start dancing, which you couldn't really see, but believe me, I was dancing. How about you, Holly? Were you dancing?
I definitely was. Other than dancing to fun and upbeat songs, do you do any other type of dancing, Paulina?
No, I don't do any dancing, and I'm not really very fit at the moment. I feel like the last few months have just made me very lazy, which might be the case for you as well. So if you're looking for some great tips, here's Chris Simpson with 5 top tips on keeping a healthy routine.
My name is Chris Simpson from the organizational development team. So this episode is going to be kind of not specifically just on exercise, but creating a healthy routine. And it's based on the work of Dr. Beth Healy, who worked for the European Space Agency and spent 9 months in Antarctica at the Concordia station. And she researched the effects of physical and psychological isolation on crew members and came up with some kind of top tips herself that I'm going to share now in regards to how we can create a healthy routine. And it's not just exercise, but there's a big part of it. So the first thing is to set some goals and make sure that they're achievable goals. And also look at what your motivation is. You know, why do you want to do this exercise? You know, pressuring yourself into a better physique, which may be based on underlying body image issues, is just not probably the best way to go about it at the moment. And instead, maybe switching your thinking to, I'm doing this because I want to switch off from work. Or I want to, I don't know, engage with my mind differently, is probably going to be more productive than setting kind of goals about having a six pack by a certain date. What we do ask is that you switch these into what we call SMART goals. And you might have heard this in a business sense, but I've applied this so much in the past with others and supporting others, including myself, by putting these into SMART goals in a personal sense. So what a SMART goal is you need to make it specific. And that's what the S is. So really drill down and make your goal or objective specific. You need to make it measurable. That's the M. So how will I know I've done it? What's my evidence that I've done it? You need to make it achievable. Very important you make it achievable. And a lot of research tells us that if you set a goal that is too easy, you won't do it. You'll disengage. If you set a goal that's too hard, you won't do it. You'll disengage. So it's very, very important that you set the goal between those two distances. It's something a guy called Lev Vygotsky described as the zone of proximal development. And it's very true. It sounds a bit of a fancy phrase, but it's very true. That if you can set goals between those two distances, that's a bit of a stretch, but it is achievable, you're more likely to meet them. So make sure it's achievable. And the R stands for relevant. And we've kind of already established that it's relevant because of the situation we're in at the moment. And you need to make it time bound. So actually, there's a deadline for it. So an example of a non-SMART goal would be New Year's Day. I'm sure a lot of us will have done this. I want to get more healthy, or I want to get more fit. I want to do more exercise. And a year later, we're probably setting the same goal. A SMART version of that would be, I want to get fit enough to run a half marathon in under 2 hours in June. That's a SMART goal. It's really specific. It's measurable because you've said, I want to do it within 2 hours. It's probably achievable. It's relevant to you because you're setting it as something that's important to you, and it's time bound. I want to do it by June. So try and make sure when you're setting these goals, tick off each of those five. Unfortunately, I see so much across different organizations. I see SMART goals, I see MART goals, I see SMER goals, but you've got to make sure you tick off all five of those and you will achieve your objectives. Number two is when you're doing this healthy routine, trust the professionals. Now, the 30-day plan of how to do a plank for 5 minutes. What's really interesting about this is that, for instance, someone like myself, I would have thought, okay, to even start getting to 5 minutes, I need to start straight away by doing like a minute to a minute and a half straight away off the bat. And what's interesting, the professionals say, no, you don't even look at a minute and a half till day 12. You need to build up your capacity in small chunks over a longer period of time with rest. So day one is 20 seconds, day two is 20 seconds, day four is 30 seconds, day five is 40 seconds, then you have a day off. And it goes up and up and up all the way through to a minute and a half wouldn't even be till day 12. And then you get a day off afterwards anyway. And eventually you'd be able to get to 5 minutes without stopping. I run a couple of half marathons in the last 6 months or so. And that came from a complete standing start between the ages of 0 and 35. I've never done any running, and I did the stupid thing of, you know, I just moved the dress and I found somewhere that I thought would be a great place to run, and on the Saturday I ran 5k and I thought I feel fine. On the Sunday I ran 5k and thought I feel fine, so I thought I'll do it on the Monday as well, and I broke down injured. So it's really important that you follow a professional training plan. Run on a Monday, Wednesday and Sunday, and the Monday distance pretty much stays the same throughout, and the Wednesday and Sunday distance each week goes up incrementally. And you have those rest days. And would you believe, you know, within a year or so of doing that and following that pattern, I've managed to run 2 half marathons and I've not had any injuries, which is incredible, given I got injuries straight away. And that's because I ran using a training plan. Now, the reason this is relevant to you guys is that if you're starting from a position of zero and you've not done any exercise, that's fine. I was exactly the same. But by following professional plan, I managed to get there without injuries. That's the critical piece of this. It was without injuries. Tip number three, ensure you're doing something. So if there is a day that you think, oh, I can't really be bothered to do too much, try and ensure you're doing something, because I've got a fantastic quote here, which is, the only bad workout is the one that didn't happen. So try and do something when you can. Tip four is to reward yourself after exercise. And, you know, if there's a favorite program that you have every week that you want to watch, or if there's a particular thing that you really enjoy doing at home at the moment, now that you're, you know, in isolation or you're with your partner, whatever it might be, you know, reward yourself with that after the exercise. So say, okay, I'm not going to watch that episode of Killing Eve until I've done my exercise, because that's going to be my reward. Number five, and the final tip, and essentially it's scheduling in rest. So making sure that your rest is actually acknowledged and scheduled in your diary, so you protect that time so you actually do rest. And you can do the same with sleep. In fact, it's very much recommended. You know, if you had a notification now saying you've got a meeting starting in 15 minutes, you would attend that meeting in 15 minutes. Why not have the same for sleep? Okay, it's now time I need to get ready for bed so I get enough sleep so I'm fit and ready for the next day. So scheduling your rest and scheduling your sleep is a good way of creating a healthy routine. So stay safe, stay well, and stay connected.
You're listening to The Happy Hour Show on RNIB Connect Radio. That was Chris Simpson with his 5 top tips on creating a healthy routine. I don't know about you, Paulina, but I found that really useful.
I've actually used one of Chris's tips today, because I went for my first run in a year, I think, and honestly, there is no way I would have been able to run 1k, let alone 5k. So I've done what Chris suggested. It was gradual. I used one of those apps, the Couch to 5k, did a little bit of running, a little bit of walking, and back again and back again, because I'm definitely not in shape. I would be winded after 30 seconds. And I think, unlike me, Holly, you are actually managing to stay fit despite everything that's going on.
Oh, well, I try to, but it sounds like you're off to a great start. So what I do is I go on my exercise bike in the garage for a few minutes. So I put some music on and cycle away. But I'm also working from home at the moment, so I also try to go for a walk and get a bit of fresh air. At least I say I do these things. I try to do these things.
And that's fine. Baby steps are okay. And coming up, our Holly Tuke spoke with activist Caroline Casey to hear her personal journey of learning to accept sight loss.
Caroline Casey is a disability activist and founder of the business inclusion company Bink. If you aren't familiar with Caroline's story, it's unique and one of defiance. She has had a vision impairment since she was a child, but her parents raised her as if she was sighted in order for her not to be defined by her disability. She found out about her vision impairment on her 17th birthday, and I guess you could say the rest is history. Caroline joins me now. Hi, Caroline.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, I'm good.
After finding out about your vision impairment when you were 17, you kept it hidden for 11 years. What feelings did you experience in regards to your vision impairment during this time?
Well, so the first thing for me was I always knew I was different. But, you know, I imagine all children do. So growing up, we all feel like we kind of don't fit in or we don't really belong. So when I discovered that and it was by accident that I had ocular albinism, which is my condition, which meant that I have, you know, I'm the level of registered blind, which I am. I couldn't really understand it. And then I could. So it sort of made sense that that's maybe why I had felt different. But what I didn't understand was, if I was that, how did I get to 17 and not know? How did I go to a normal school and try and play sports? Because I hadn't met somebody like me. I now have met lots of people like me, but then I hadn't. And then, so the first real feeling was like, that's not true. That is absolutely not true. I don't want that. I didn't want the label. Denial, non-belief, and defiance, I think. And so I was like, well, I got to 17 the way I was, the way I am. So why should I change anything? And so the only difference is that I consciously knew now that I would be hiding it myself, and which I did. And between the ages of 17 and 28, which is the 11 years that I consciously hid it, every year got harder. Every year got harder. Because going from school to university to your first job and all those things, and every year towards 28, it was becoming harder because I, like anybody, I needed some help, but I just didn't know how to ask and I didn't want to. And so I think really towards the end, I just didn't like who I was anymore because I was frustrated. I was angry. I was resentful. And though I imagine nobody saw that because I was having a very successful life, whatever success is in, you know, air quotes, you know, on the outside, my life looked very successful, but I wasn't happy. I really wasn't happy. I didn't like hanging out with myself, if that made sense. So all the distraction and all the running and all the overachieving and all of the compensating and all the, I will do this despite my eyes, it just eventually caught up at 28. And I think I just came to a place that I had to come out of the closet, which I did.
It's really important to recognise the range of feelings and emotions we can experience about our vision impairment. What was the turning point for you in terms of accepting and embracing your vision impairment?
So I think, isn't this a really, the issue of self-acceptance is something everybody struggles with, whether you have sight loss or not. And so what I would say is, in accepting my vision, it was more about accepting who I was and am and growing into and changing. And I couldn't tell you that there's one point of which that I went, oh, yes, this is it. I totally accept it. Because God, there's days I really don't like it, right? There's days that I fight with my eyes. I have days that it feels like my eyes are this other person trying to, in my mind, dilute, you know, my life. But on the most part, I have to tell you, I think I'm okay now. Coming to terms with my sight is no different to coming to terms with who I am as an individual. It just takes time, and it takes work, and it takes constant growth. But talking about it and finding other people who have a similar experience to me is about the best thing. And so when you asked me to come and do this, it was like, yeah, I want to have a conversation with lots of other people who might have a similar experience to mine. And the greatest chance of acceptance is when we hear the world start speaking about our experiences, because we can see ourselves in them.
Personally, I think being part of the vision impairment community is amazing. And for some people, it can be life-changing. So it's really nice to hear that from someone else.
I have to say, I agree. And I think for me, one of the greatest lessons is how people who have vision impairment or actually other disabilities, the way in which we are very creative in finding solutions to get about and thrive in a world that has not been designed for us. Because let's be honest, the world is designed for people with either good vision, perfect vision, or when they have their glasses on, you know, it's not designed for people who don't see very well, nor people who have mobility issues or don't hear very well. And so we have had to really be resourceful and tenacious in finding those solutions. And so for me, the community of people who experience sight loss are an extraordinary resource, because we see differently. People forget that we do still see, we just see differently.
People often forget that vision impairment is a spectrum.
Yeah. And I think when people don't experience sight loss, they imagine it is the absolute worst thing that could happen to you, right? And so you're nearly hearing everybody else's opinion. They think, how would I survive? How could I cope? And this is where the mental health part of it comes in, because first of all, we forget that you know, loss of sight is more prevalent, you know. There are less of us born with sight conditions than there are that acquire sight loss. And I think in acquiring sight loss, there's the trauma of it, the loss of it. And because the world imagines that you can't have a life, how could you? How can you work? How can you travel? How can you fall in love? How can you be a mom? How can you do all of these things if you're blind or visually impaired? And so I think when people go through sight loss, and in my case, I did, because though I was born with the vision impairment, I consciously lost my sight at 17, and I battled with it.
As we've said, accepting and learning to love your vision impairment can often be a journey in itself for many blind and visually impaired people. How have your feelings changed towards your vision impairment over time?
I don't fight with it anymore. It's not my enemy. You know, I spent a long time fighting with it, trying to overachieve, overcompensate, be better than, be amazing, you know, to just so that the sight wouldn't matter. And like, that's just ridiculous, the pressure that puts a person under, you know. And so my relationship now is, it's just part of me. And you know what? I now ask for help. I'm not angry with it anymore. I'm not trying to beat it. I'm not trying to win with it. I've also learned as a person, I find it very hard to be vulnerable. So I've had to sort of rewire myself to actually say that I might need some help. And it doesn't mean I'm weak. It just means I need some help. So you can hear there's I'm much more gentle with that journey about my eyes. It's just part of who I am.
People may resent their vision impairment for a while, but the puzzle pieces will fit together.
Yeah, that's a lovely way of saying it. I mean, I had a great life until I was 28, but my life is so full, because it's such a cliche to say this, but when I was accepted that I didn't see very well, I truly got to see so much more. And you can hear the wobble in my voice, because I sometimes think, why would I have wasted 11 years of my life trying to be somebody I wasn't? And then I got to 28 and look at the life I've led since I was 28 years old. I've gone across India on an elephant. I've gone around the world in 80 ways. I've crossed Colombia on a horse. I have set up several organizations around the world. I have been lucky enough to work with some of the best teams. I've produced an award-winning film called Diversish. I have, you know, worked with some of the greatest business leaders in the world. And I have now launched with an incredible group of people, the Valuable 500, which is getting 500 of the world's most influential business leaders to put disability on their leadership agenda and really transform the business system. Look what I'm doing now. Now that I own that I don't see. And you know the best part of all of this? By owning that my sight is different, I can get to play out to be my different. I've made things happen because I kind of believe in magic, and people sort of believe in me because I am different. And my sight is one of my magic ingredients. And some days it's the thing that frustrates me and I get scared like anybody else and I have bad eye days. And in other days, it's my magic sauce, you know? It's my magic sauce. And I was asked a few days ago in doing a media interview, you know, would if you could have an eye operation that would make you see perfectly, would you do it? And you know something? I don't know anymore. I don't know. Because I just think this is this experience that I've had, this way that I see the world has just given me more opportunity than I would have ever had if I had stayed in that closet. Like, I would have had half of my potential, if not even a third of it. That's all I would have lived, a third of my potential. And so, yeah, it was kind of like the missing jigsaw piece. Yeah.
If there's anything that we can take away from this, I think it's the fact that it's okay to go on your own journey with your sight loss. Caroline, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us on R&IB Connect Radio.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Wow, Caroline sounds amazing. I'm so jealous of you, Holly. I don't think it's often that we hear someone speak so openly about their journey through sight loss.
It was really nice to sit down and chat to Caroline. It actually made me reflect on my own journey of accepting my vision impairment. I hope it helped you as well. We've got our motivational song of the week coming up, but first, here's Elton John and I'm Still Standing.
You can never know what it's like. Your blood like winter freezes just like ice. And there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You wind up like the wreck you hide.
You're listening to The Happy Hour on RNIB Connect Radio with your hosts, Polina Kuhorev
and Holly Chuk.
We loved having your company today. It was our very first show and I was a little bit nervous.
Yeah, me too. But it's been really fun and I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
And now we have one more thing for you, and it's our motivational song of the week. And each show, we're going to choose a track that has meaning to us, whether it's the lyrics, or maybe it's just a situation we heard it for the first time, or maybe it just makes you feel giddy and happy and want to dance. Whatever it is, if you have a motivational song that you'd like to share with us, you can always email us. It's radio@rnib.org.uk. We're also on Twitter at RNIB Radio, or you can find us on Facebook as RNIB Connect Radio. Now, let's not delay any longer. This week's track was actually chosen by you, Holly, wasn't it?
Yeah, I actually first heard this song a couple of months ago, and when I heard it, I just thought the lyrics were amazing. This song is a reminder that it's okay to admit that you're struggling and it's okay to ask for help. This is our motivational song of the week. It's called Okay Not to Be Okay, and it's by Marshmello and Demi Lovato.
It's okay not to be okay.
Hey,
Hey, you've been listening to the Happy Hour podcast, a trimmed down version of our hour-long show. If you're enjoying the songs and would like to hear them in full along with all the interviews, tips and our chat, just catch the full show plus some extra tracks that you might have missed on RNIB Connect Radio. We're on every Monday at 1 p.m. with a repeat Thursday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 10 a.m. And we have new episodes every other week. I hope you enjoyed the Happy Hour podcast and we'll see you on the next episode.